My English name is Roy Deasis. My Tlingit name is Geet Wayne. From Angoon, Alaska. I was born in Angoon. I was raised here in Juneau. I appreciate the opportunity to express myself in terms of these items that the commission is interested in. I don't really have anything prepared, although I do have some materials that when I'm through, I would like to leave with you and the commission for your digestion and hopefully getting the full flavor of some of the things that I think we all are trying to say. It seems as though that, a lot of what I'm hearing, if an outsider, so to speak, were to hear the conversations that were taking place, the dialogue, one would think that we have people on two different sides of one fence, and I think that's not a bad analogy. That describes pretty well the feelings of many people here. It seems as though we're living in times of, it's clear to many people, it's a clear case of the haves and the have-nots. At one point in time, our people, the Aboriginal people of Alaska, were those that had. And as time goes by, as westernization advances and has its effect on us, we clearly recognize that there is a dominant society, and our participation in the overall scenario of living in the United States today is one where we're generally recipients of rules and regulations that are made that of course affect us, but in many instances it seems as though the length of time that our people, where we can point in terms of generations and generations of people living, inhabiting a particular area of the world, these people it's been articulated by a number of people that we're losing our culture, I think. You know, that may be saying it bluntly, and there may be other things that perhaps should be said along with that very blunt statement. But I'm not a historian. As a matter of fact, academically, comparatively speaking, I think I'm probably pretty limited. But I feel that in the years that I've been around and the people that I've been exposed to, I've learned a few things. One, that hindsight generally affords us better vision with some sense of maturity as opposed to trying to figure out things in the future. And with our people living in this area for such a long time and with the United States itself, I would use the term practically in its infancy. We just celebrated 200 years a few years ago of the birth of this nation. And I guess the essence of what I'm talking about has to deal with respect or how we treat one another. A couple of years ago, almost a couple of years ago, I had the honor and the privilege of speaking for the people of Angoon regarding an incident that occurred a little over 100 years ago. Some of the things that I had heard yesterday, I really wasn't prepared to give testimony like this, but some of the things that I had heard yesterday and simply reminded me of some of the discussions that I've had with a number of people with similar concerns that are mine, that are innate, that they're inherent simply because of who I am and where I've come from. We felt some loss. In any case, what I'm leading up to, or what I alluded to more specifically, is that a couple of years ago I had the opportunity to initiate dialogue with the Assistant Secretary of the Navy at the Pentagon regarding an issue that occurred involving combined military forces and the people of Angoon. And essentially what that was the shelling and burning of essentially of the community of Angoon at that time, where 6 children died. In our culture, it's been said that we have an oral history, and that this is how information is passed on. And along with that, if it makes any sense to you, it's a mode that allows for the emotion to be felt when things are passed down in this manner, as opposed to the words on a written piece of paper. One of the things that I had learned from my visit to the Pentagon with one of the elders from Angoon was what I think was, or what I was told was, the attitude of our people generations ago. And as far as I'm concerned, I would hope that it's still the attitude of our people. I can speak for myself and still say that it's mine. But I thought it was stated in a manner that says it quite simply. The analogy reflects an attitude of those people that were here to those people that were coming, that you can come and eat with us, but don't break the dish. Perhaps you've heard this already from the number of people that have been expressing themselves, and perhaps you might hear it again, but it's something that I don't mind repeating at all. It's an analogy that makes a lot of sense, and to those that it does make some sense to, there are those of us that feel that the dish is broken. And the dish that we're talking about is the abundance that we have here naturally. We're simply concerned. We've lived in this area with, once again, what I would term a level of respect for the land and others, where we've been able to survive for who knows how long, thousands of years. We have stories that go back talking about the ice moving. So I guess what I'm talking about, as I said in the beginning, is has to deal with the level of respect that we're afforded. I know that it's probably I'm not being very specific. I know that the different people that have been up here have given you different instances or occurrences in time that reflect what I'm talking about. But to go back to, for example, the bombardment of Angoon, this was action taken by combined military forces on a people that, to me, if this action were taken, these people were regarded as another nation, as opposed to, well, let me just speak to the action that was taken, the hurt that has been felt, and what I think amounts to, the issue hasn't been closed, at least not as far as the people of Angoon are concerned. A wound has been inflicted, and the scar that is left is pretty ugly. The people of Angoon a couple of years ago asked at the time simply for a formal apology from the Navy, since the Department of the Navy was ultimately responsible. It was Commander E.C. Merriman, who was the ranking government official at that time, who happened to be in charge of those forces that took this action upon Angoon. And I'm only speaking of Angoon as an example of the lack of respect that has been afforded people, our people. We asked for a formal apology. We're told by the Navy or the Assistant Secretary that, we recognize that we shouldn't have done it, but we can't give you a formal apology. That was the essence of that part of the conversation. The other part that we had requested was to have a Navy ship named in honor of Angoon. And basically, these simple requests amount to opening the door to allowing the Navy or the U.S. government to show some of the respect that wasn't evident 100 years ago. In any case, the response to that part of the request was, well, we don't see any problem with that. Since that time, we haven't heard from those folks. On our visit to Washington, D.C., we managed to, through the news media, I guess you can say open the door, in as much as we had some press releases about our visit to Washington, D.C. and what we wanted to do. This was the 100th year. What we were doing was hopefully preparing in part for the 100-year celebration, or not celebration, excuse me, that's absolutely the wrong word, commemoration of that sad occurrence. I'm also not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but I do believe that when any ugly instance occurs, there has to be some form of closure, especially when those entities are still have their senses about them to have some feelings. In this particular case, our people still speak with pain about those instances. And I think that, I hope that I'm not coming across as being selfish when I speak of this occurrence in Angoon, but in the interest of time, I chose maybe to talk around that particular subject, but the essence of what I'm getting at simply has to deal with respect, how we treat one another, how we have lived for generations and generations. I think the respect that we had afforded those that wanted to come north to this country of such abundance, there wasn't anything. I really believe our attitude was, sure, you can come and eat with us, but don't break the dish. Show some respect when you come to my house. I think that also that there are there are many things that need to be recognized. And I don't mean only on one side of the fence. I think there, of course, are things on both sides of the fence. But when I think about such things as hearing a question of subsistence, and when I hear the person in our state lawmaking body that introduces this, that advocates for this, that talks about equal opportunity in that sense, but then when we talk about equal opportunity in terms of jobs, it's a yardstick that conveniently gets pulled back in. When we recognize, for example, that particular person, who happens to have been in a state now for about 14 or 15 years, introduces this with what I would term a twang, I think it makes me sit back and think, how many, look at what is happening here. We have what I would term a recent resident that with their own initiative, which is applaudable, but they've managed to get themselves in a position where they're making laws that affect so many, that detrimentally affect the Aboriginal people. And I'm speaking of the idea of subsistence, with apparently no appreciation for the lifestyle of people that have been living a subsistence type of lifestyle. That, in concert with the other thing that I alluded to regarding employment, when the topic came up of equal opportunity, at least in terms of employment with the state, this person didn't have anything to say. And what I'm getting at is we need to recognize that these things are occurring, not only as far as the dominant society is concerned, but our own people need to recognize these things. I think much has been said both this evening and in the previous two evenings of our concerns. Perhaps I should have been better prepared to express a few things, but on the other hand, much that I've heard has already been, I think, said well enough. The other thing that I wanted to say was, I guess maybe in terms of credibility, if you can believe that a person such as myself, there are times when I look at it, I feel like I live in two different worlds. I have my mother, my grandmother. My mother has a fourth grade education. I have a number of grandmothers, various aunts and uncles. And when I hear them, and when I am around them, live around them, or go back to Angoon, there's a very clear distinction in that lifestyle as opposed to the other lifestyle that I'm referring to in dealing with someone such as yourself or any of the other people in a larger setting. So I think what I'm saying is I feel that I have a unique perspective. I've also grown up in a time that has been very dynamic, at least historically speaking. A lot of things have happened in the last 20 years. We have men on the moon. There are just so many things that I think need to be recognized. I'm not of the opinion personally that where I want to say we want this or we want that, because I recognize under the system, I think, as I understand it, under the system that we live in, the democratic system, there are other people here, and there isn't a whole lot that we can do about moving those people out where we become the larger numbers and be able to do the things that we want to do. So I think I recognize that we need to change as well, or recognize a few things. I feel that I'm somewhat rambling right now. I'd like to read a portion of a letter that I had written to President Reagan a year and a half ago regarding the bombardment of Angoon. And it's a part that well, I thought I had it. I guess I'm not as prepared as I probably should be. In as much as I feel that this is an important opportunity to express a few things. But the essence of what I wanted to convey had to deal with change, had to deal with, and it was a quote from an inscription on the Jefferson Memorial, words from Thomas Jefferson, one of those that, at least when I was growing up, had learned that this is a person that I should hold in high regard. And the essence of what he had to say was that we need to change our way of thinking, that a child, when he grows up, no longer wears the clothing of a child. I certainly didn't say that as it was inscribed, but that was part of what I wanted to say. I think I ought to conclude my remarks right now, in as much as I seem to be stumbling a bit. I would like to leave you with a couple of documents, and once again say that it makes sense to me when our people feel that you can come and eat with us, but don't break the dish. I think it's a nice way of saying it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think it's a good phrase too. I hadn't heard it before.
I'll leave you these other things as well.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Joe Bennett. I have a little problem speaking here because I have. But I come from Mangoon. Seems to be an Mangoon night tonight, so I decided to make a testimony also. I'm probably one of the elderly people from Mangoon attending here tonight. I want to express first and before I go any further to say that our people are not in one place in a time when they migrated from different places. According to my grandfather, we migrated from Chiik Bay and Hood Bay all the way through Admiralty Island. And for that reason, our people decided that they would control the whole Admiralty Island. In Indian rule, there are some here from Huna, probably some from Tlakwan, probably some from Cake. As an Indian law, I am not supposed to go across my own boundary to interfere with those that are doing their own. This is what not even recognized in Washington, D.C. First of all, you know, land claim is, we are going by your law now. But the time when the law was required in our tribal, there were chiefs who would sit with his council to designate who would be the one speaker. Now tonight I want to say what Brother Roy was talking about. There was a misunderstanding because of our Indian law, and American law was in different form, and our people didn't understand it. So there was a misunderstanding between the two nations. For that reason, there was a hard feeling. There were some people that died for no reason at all, but per misunderstanding. There are different versions. But I believe what my grandfather said was the correct version. There was a lot of hurt that was created for our people. This land claim thing, I can't say that it had benefited any people that are sitting here tonight or any place. You probably go to Sitka, you probably hear the same thing. You'll go to Angoon, you probably hear the same thing. What did it do for us? For one thing, I believe that it took away a lot of things after. Now, right after what I stated for our Indian law, there was another thing that came into our Indian tribal. That was the IRA through the Wheeler-Howard Act. I was on the board member for many years, and we could probably accept it, the Indian tribal sovereignty at the time. That probably would be a self-government. But for some reason, our people denied themselves to accept it. I don't know why. But I think that thing still is in existence. And I feel that if any Indian village would go for it to understand it, I think they still have a right to have that sovereignty. And subsistence. This is how we lift off our land. We didn't go to food land or any place that the big stores carry now. We went our way that we could go down to a creek, and every creek that is around Chatham Strait, our people got names for it. For instance, just for an example, up in the inlet in Angoon, there's one inlet there that is called Canal Kubay. They mispronounce the Indian name. It belongs to Kanashku, they call it. But it applies to who owns it. That's a Deshitan, that's my tribe. I come from the Raven, and I come from the Raven House in Angoon. In fact, I think there must be about 75 to 80% of Angoonians right here in Juneau. I don't know how many left in Angoon. It's amazing to see how these people are battling for land now. Is it true the land claim that we don't have any united people anymore? It seems like some club would come in and say, hey, this man is grabbing my land. Come on, go after him. I'll support you with money. That's the thing that's happening. I don't want to name any club, but all I could say is not a devil club, it's something else. If we can understand our way of life, I think things would be united again, once again. We've come a long ways now that we cannot turn back, but we have to continue to look forward to our future, for our children's sake, for our grandchildren's sake. One thing that's important now to me is that we have to look at 1991. Regardless of what it looks like, we have to understand, but we are not getting educated in that area. I don't know why. This thing that's going to happen here, this here, and nobody's prepared. I came here just because somebody told me. I think it's my brother Tom that called me that there's a hearing going on there. And I couldn't get prepared for it, but I'm going to tell you just what I feel from my mind. There's a lot of ways that our Indian people got hurt because of this thing. Now, we talk about cooperation. Before the land claim, I worked for a lot of company that is non-Indian. Because of my production to their processing, I was available that I could receive any good benefits from them. The fact that I went, I bought a boat, and the mortgage was paid by the company. 1980, I approached the Sea Alaska if they can assist me to buy a vessel. I felt that, well, we're in business now as Canada people, I could go and ask them for assistance. But I was denied, and I had to do it on my own. I had to go to a bank, and the bank charges you 18%. How are you going to live? You might as well just give it up and say, well, I'll just lay down and forget about what I'm supposed to be doing. I've been doing this for over 35 years. And even though it's that hard, I still continue to do it, but we still got no help. We're still not had any benefit from our cooperation. I in fact went to the office of one certain man, and I told him about what the IRA used to do, is to have a revolving fund for people that are trusted and for people that could qualify, and that you could borrow money for a certain amount of interest. They don't have to charge us 20%. Because we are stockholders, we could pay at least even 10%, which would be a lot for their cooperation. Ask the people if they are still in a form of business, if they are still doing what we've been doing there for some number of years. I know that a lot of, I also, before I say anything further, I suggested also to the cooperation of Sea Alaska and Tlingit and Haida that our officers should get the names of qualified people. Get a list of everyone that is qualified to be a good fisherman, and then buy them the permits, because the non-natives will not help you anymore. Since after the land claim, we were cut down that we are not going to get help from them anymore, because they don't trust us anymore because of our big cannery operation. But the cannery operation is so far away from us, we don't even get any benefit from it either. So those things that are happening, I think that because there is no input from the stockholders whatsoever. If the gentleman want to know anything about fisheries, I'm qualified to tell him how fishing should be transacted. Because I've been in this for over 35 years up to today. There's a lot of things that we need to know, and a lot of things that we have to fight for now is to remember, like, what Brother John Bober said. I want to say here and that I agree with every word that he has stated here. I want to be one to say that. I don't want to take too much time, because I know there are a lot of people here that would want to get their testimony. I think this is good. I think this is good for our people to know just what's here in our heart, because we don't have a chance to state our facts or to say what we need. What we need now is to a little help from what we're trying to do, but we're still being denied of it. So I just want to appreciate, and I thank you very much for giving me that much time.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Thank you, sir.
My name is Margaret Gamble. I'm a shareholder, Sea Alaska, Gold Belt, and also originally from Angoon. I migrated like the rest of them because my husband wanted me to live here, because he was born here and raised here in Juneau. So was Mr. Borbridge. Mr. Borbridge asked me to interpret what he said in Tlingit. I will try now. Get it. I try to prepare a statement, but in listening to the first evening, all those concerns are the same concerns that I share and most all of us share. We have problems. Question, where do you go to air them out? We've lost communication with our own people. Somehow or another, you reach that point, there's no hope, and along comes a commission. I really want to thank the Review Commission for giving us this opportunity to air our frustrations. The first night I heard Representative Ward, I heard another Harvard graduate, the very same concerns being expressed. My time was John Barber's time. My generation, we did what we could. I don't apologize for that generation. It's up to the new generation, I feel, people like the one that had prepared a lengthy statement, which we now have available to others that would like to have a copy. My husband and I made copies. How has Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act affected my life? I really don't know. I wish someone could tell me. It's a terrible thing to say. On December 18, 1971, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was passed. It promised us a new horizon, a new dimension, planning and using natural resources to enhance our progress. The Claims Settlement Act was not a gift or a contribution. We heard a lot about education tonight, and I really agree with them. The center of focus of any resource development effort must be the building of people, the development of human resource. The corporation and its structure is a new endeavor in which we have not had any experience. I strongly feel that we failed to develop a plan for guidance and training for our younger generation. Most of our corporate leaders and employees entered the corporate world without any qualifications essential to a successful operation. For most of us, it was on-the-job training. We hear about losses. What do? We all know what we feel tonight is fear. Where can we go? We seek guidance. Perhaps it's too late for our counterpart, the non-native. Who can help us? We can beg the Sierra Club to listen to us. We've walked in our moccasins, let them walk with us just once. As I stated before, land claims was not a gift nor a contribution. We've lived here from time immemorial. We had our own boundary lines. It was sacred to the tribal clans. We knew where the lines were, the boundaries. We hear of the Taku tribe, Mansfield Peninsula. Also the Occoquan tribe. We hear that they had their own government, which was copied by the United States, as you well know. We have the Democrats and the Republicans. We have the Eagles and the Ravens. I feel the major problem is education. I don't feel that we should pay for our education. In accepting a new culture, it is not fair for us to go out there and beg for money to go to school while we are learning our ways. It is hard for our parents. They live for the day when we can have an input in our own destiny. We thought we made it through land claims. Little did we know there was a bigger challenge ahead of us. We heard there was a failure put into the act. Now I can see it. I didn't want to believe it. We have these people protecting our environment. Our people knew about clean waters. They lived off the land. The land was them. They accepted a new culture. They were forced to accept a new culture. We've asked for help because we hear about the mainstream. How do we get there? They ridicule our lifestyle. They have never accepted us for what we are. We are now speaking because some of us can speak English, and yet we're not really on that level where we can really go into a corporate world. I fear for the day when my children, when it becomes their turn to serve their people as we move on in your world. It would appear I'm addressing you, but I'm addressing whoever can hear me out there. It is hard. I have worked in the state government from 1957. I know what it is. I was there on a competitive basis. I was one of the few. And I remained there. I don't see too many changes. We ask for something because we feel that we've come to that point that we feel that we can also structure ourselves as our non-native counterpart. They turn around and tell us, we are asking for too much. It is hard to understand sometimes. They have said one thing at one time, they turn around and say something else. Getting back to our corporate leaders, perhaps through this hearing, they will be able to listen to us again because, as most of them expressed here tonight, they are listening to a different drummer. There are a lot of us back there wishing someone would come along to help us, especially the non-Native group and perhaps the Alaska state legislators and our governor. We don't ask for too much. And when we do, they tell us we are asking for too much. We lost most of our land, our waters, our resources. What will we have left? In order to survive, I believe we really have to encourage our younger generation to go back to school. We need to tell the state that we still need their help to educate our young ones. Perhaps I'm skipping around tonight. There's so much I want to say, but I really would like to say I want to encourage the young ones as I usually do. Some of them are here tonight. As I move on, perhaps it's their turn now, and I realize that I only want to support them and advise them from the sideline. The one main concern is 1991. Perhaps we'll not be concerned with it when they've collateralized most of our land to pay for the debts we've incurred. The other one is conflict of interest and nepotism. We have leaders that have been there since, I should say, the year one, but 13 years. They have not given the younger generation a chance to serve. Those are our problems. Like Representative Ward said the other night, I hope someone is listening out there. We are crying for help, even from our Native point of view. It would be shameful, and yet it's not. I'm not saying that we deserve it. We know we can honestly say that this was our land. How will we tell our children in a few years from now? It used to be your land. when we lose all everything. When you go on to Sitka, I would like to say in support of Sitka Sciatica, I did not know that one group of people would be treated different when it came to land claims and land selections. Had I known, I don't think I would have supported land claims. Thank you.
Well, yeah.
I want you to know that it's not my people out there that are going to make me nervous. It's this microphone. My name is Carolyn Martin. I was raised not in Angoon, I was raised in Hoona and presently reside here in Juneau. I am the mother of 6 children and am also the mother to 1 grandson. Thus my concern for the future of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. I've appreciated the opportunity to sit and listen to concerns, questions, and suggestions expressed over the past couple of days. It is my understanding that the Alaska Native Review Commission was created to examine the intent of ANCSA and its consequences in the lives of all Alaskan Natives. I don't know about you, but ANCSA is very unsettling to me. We have been structured to live like the white man because times are changing. Corporations were formed to organize our instant wealth. We were told that we would be able to sell our stock in 1991 and have some fun with the money. How exciting, how enticing. What they failed to tell us was that we would lose our land if we sold our stock. What they also failed to tell us was that if our corporations could not turn a profit, we would be forced to sell our corporate shares and learn what it would be like to have our lands taken for tax default and bought up by strangers. This brings to mind a similar kind of arrangement, the infamous treaty. And that is all the act is, an arrangement, designed, written, and signed, not by the Alaska Natives, but by Congress and the President of the United States. Laws, like treaties, become outdated by reality. This deserves some thought. There is an amazing amount of discontent about the profit-making motives of the Native corporations. Who is actually benefiting from ANCSA? Whose interests are they really looking out for? When board members declare $30,000 to $40,000 in per diem and board fees at the end of the year, questions begin to rise. Who is actually benefiting? I must also stress that each corporation, village or regional, needs to be very careful in selecting avenues of various activities. Whatever mistake one corporation makes reflects ever so effectively on all other corporations. Another issue that I would like to address is with regard to land conveyance. The Act calls for title of land to pass immediately. If this would have happened, the 20-year time frame would certainly be reasonable, but this has not been the case. Bearing this in mind, I have a suggestion. Realizing that a certain time frame was set out, let the 20-year countdown begin after the land conveyance process has been completed. I'm not aware of whether or not you will be in a position to make specific recommendations. Even if my suggestion falls on deaf ears, I will at least be able to tell my family that I tried. I put in my 2 cents worth. Another aspect of land conveyance that concerns me is with regard to the unlisted village. There were several families that registered to the village of Tenneke. We were declared ineligible under Section 11 of the Act, but we were not given the consideration due our group under subsection 14H2.
The secretary had the option of declaring us a native group, conveying title to the surface estate of not more than 23,000 acres surrounding the village of Tanaki. We weren't even given the option of registering to another village corporation. We were given at-large status. I would like to move on to health and education-related problems. These problems reflect directly on our children and grandchildren who, let's face it, represent the future of our heritage. Because I am involved in health issues at the national level, I have had the opportunity to track the nation's budget on a regular basis. The attitude of Capitol Hill is that because the Alaska Natives have already been given millions of dollars through ANCSA, they can begin to be their own providers. The closure of 20-plus BIA schools, including Mount Edgecombe High School, is a prime example. I consider this a breach of trust responsibility at its best. I desire my children to be educated through an educational process which will ensure their development to fulfill meaningful leadership roles, as set out by the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act. Is their health going to be guarded throughout this process? I'm afraid not. Not with trust responsibility being watered down because of ANCSA dollars. One last issue that I have concern about is that of Native allotments. Because I grew up with the Thlingit tradition, I am well aware of my ancestral rights. I know what lands my forefathers utilized for their subsistence lifestyle. And yet, our families are required to prove, again, that we are the rightful heirs to these allotments. The Shields case is a good example here. Although the Shields family for generations utilized the land for which they applied, they were denied because Mr. Shields' date of birth was after the subject lands were withdrawn and included in the Tongass National Forest. And also because Mr. Shields could not have completed 5 years' use and occupancy of the lands claimed prior to the date of withdrawal. To top these restrictions off, an authorized officer for the Tongass National Forest has determined that the lands applied for are not valuable for agricultural or grazing purposes. Was this the intent of our forefathers? I would also like to hit briefly on the new Native, or Natives born after December 1971. I have no recommendations for stock benefits. I might state that this would be a question left to individual corporations as to whether or not they would consider making special provisions for the new Natives. I suppose the most popular recommendation to date would be the right of first refusal for corporations at the time of sale. Perhaps requiring specific approval of the corporation before selling or transferring the stock, or permitting sale or transfer only to Natives or Native corporations or organizations. With these and other considerations, then maybe the membership can be open for new Natives. I believe that our corporations can be of greater value if given the proper tools with which to develop, but it has to come with some cooperation from Congress and all Alaska Natives. Our Alaskan Natives can survive and prosper with the best of them. Thank you for allowing me the time to voice just a few of my many concerns with regard to ANCSA.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good discussion this evening. Are there any others who would like to say something? We've had 3 days here in Juneau and many presentations, and all of them have been thoughtful and useful, and I do appreciate them all. But I want to make sure we don't close the proceedings without giving everyone an opportunity to be heard. Well, I I want to thank you then, all of you, for coming tonight, and through you, all of those who attended the hearings these last 3 days. And to repeat what I said at the very beginning on Monday night when we began, that we will be holding meetings like this in every region of Alaska to complete our hearings here in Southeast Alaska. We're going on to Sitka tomorrow, and then Angoon on Saturday, and then Ketchikan Monday, and Kluwak on Thursday of next week, and then we're paying a visit to New Metlakatla a week Saturday. And then after a little time off, we're going up to the North Slope, and we'll be holding a meeting at Point Hope around June the 11th, and then we'll be going on to the interior of Alaska. And I just want you to know that I learned something from just about everybody who speaks at these hearings, and I think in the end your testimony will put together a complete picture that will enable me to write a report that truly reflects your views, the views of Alaska Natives, and that will, I hope, be a document that you can use and the state legislature, Congress can use in making plans for the future. And I just want to thank you again, and it seems strange to be adjourning before 11 o'clock, but why not to take advantage of it when it comes?